This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here is the guy with the deep voice said. A lot going on today. We're following the shooting at the Dallas ICE facility. Three shot. Don't think they're cops. Oh, excuse me, ICE agents. But the fact is, ICE being targeted again. This is happening more and more across the country, and these politicians have to be more responsible. There's no difference when you vilify ICE agents. That is to fund the police that every Democrat swears they didn't say outside Congresswoman Bush, who lost her job. So what is going on right now has got to stop. It's amazing to me, too, that more people are still lining up because there's about 10,000 money for about 10 to 15,000 more ICE agents and 100,000 applications. But, man, it's dangerous. From fellow Americans shooting American law enforcement. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Lowry and Robert O'Brien, former National Security Advisor to President Trump. A lot going on. 150 nations in the UN here today. A lot of breaking news. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man, nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make.
You really had two monologues. He had that monologue, went to break, and came back with his normal monologue, which was very anti-Trump. As usual, Jimmy Kimmel back to work, even though major station groups like Sinclair and Nexstar are not carrying his show. We'll bring back the comeback highlights.
Number two.
Will you run again? You like to run again?
That's not in my immediate not focus. Right. I'm doing my book tour. And please, everybody, come out. I'm going to a lot of cities.
Right. She hesitates on the most obvious question still. Dems in trouble as Kamala's book forces them to relive their recent disastrous past. And stats show the midterms, which historically flip power to the party out of power, are trending away from them. We have the latest on the book tour and all the hell it's causing Democrats.
Number one.
The other side can fight, too, and they've proven that. Maybe it's it could be that Russia's a paper tiger. I really don't feel that way. Let them get their land back.
Do you think that NATO countries should shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter their airspace?
Yes, I do.
I love that President Trump has changed his tactics and goes all in for Ukraine and believes they can win. Details are coming in as Zelensky will address the United Nations today. And the president blasts the organization for wasting its charter. Robert O'Brien joins us now. Robert, welcome back. We're following with the shooting in ICE. We'll keep you up to date on that. But I understand the president's frustration with the United Nations. I mean, we need a body like this, but not the way it's functioning. Do you understand the frustration?
No, I sure do, Brian, and thanks for having me on. So a lot of people don't know this. I started my career at the UN back after the first Gulf War. Deciding claims as a young lawyer against Iraq for invading Kuwait. And that was probably the last time the UN did something useful. And I returned to the UN under President W. Bush and was a U.S. representative at the General Assembly. So I know the place well. And I'll tell you, it's full of corruption and it's full of sideshows. And I think President Trump's speech to the UN may have been the best speech ever given to the UN. He did three things. He called for the UN to do what it's supposed to do, which is bring peace to the world. He says he's been getting no help on the peace front for his whole first term and the first year of his second term. He called for them to end the mass migration, which is, in effect, an invasion of Western countries, and a return to protecting sovereignty, which the UN is supposed to do. And he called for the UN to bring prosperity to the world. He said prosperity is not just for the Chinese. It's not just for the Chinese to build nuclear plants and coal plants. The whole world should have energy and prosperity, you know, not just communist China. So he was blunt. He used good humor, but he also brought a sense of urgency to the challenges facing the world right now.
Cut seven.
The UN is supposed to stop invasions, not create them and not finance them. In the United States, we reject the idea that mass numbers of people from foreign lands can be permitted to travel halfway around the world, trample our borders, violate our sovereignty, cause unmitigated crime, and deplete our social safety net. We have reasserted that America belongs to the American people, and I encourage all countries to take their own stand in defense of their citizens as well. You have to do that because I see it. I'm not mentioning names. I see it, and I can call every single one of them out. You're destroying your countries. They're being destroyed.
And he's just bringing that up because, you know what? The UN, we know, is playing a role in Central and South America, letting them through the Darien Pass. We know that they were members of UNRWA who did the October 7th Hamas killings of Jews of 1,200 plus. We know they were supplying aid to Hamas for years, and they're doing all types of climate change investigations instead of their job.
No, it's really ridiculous. They even have a commission on George Floyd to investigate the United States of America and the supposed systematic racism in our police departments. They're shuttling hundreds of thousands of Afghans and Malayans and people from the Sahel into Europe to change the face of Europe, to make Europe a third world country. And the people of Europe are starting to say no, but unfortunately the European Commission and EU have gotten in bed with the UN and on this climate change, you know, hoax.
Crap.
And mass immigration. And President Trump is saying, hey, President Trump is not only fighting for the people of America, he's fighting for the people of Western Europe and Japan and Australia, the whole free world. He's the only guy out there making a stand.
So Robert O'Brien, our guest. So Robert, I've thought about you when the president made it pretty clear. He's had it with Vladimir Putin. He looked at the reality of the battlefield after a lengthy investigation and talk with General Kellogg, as well as President Zelensky yesterday. He put this Truth Social up. I won't read the whole thing, but essentially says, after getting to know and fully understand the Ukraine, Russia, military and economic situation, after seeing the economic trouble is causing Russia, I think Ukraine, with the support of the EU, is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in its original form with time and patience and the financial support of Europe and in particular NATO. The original borders from where the war started is very much an option. Why not? Russia's been fighting aimlessly for 3.5 years in a war that should not have taken place. In fact, it very much is making them look like a paper tiger. He goes on. He's supported. Zelensky got this information in real time. I talked to Zelensky yesterday. He could not have more respect for the president than he has right now. He really believes that the president fully understands that Putin cannot be dealt with, and he respects the president's effort to try, but he thinks that we're all on the same page now. What do you think?
Well, look, I predicted this would happen for some time now, and if Putin didn't take the deal. We see how President Trump negotiates deals. I saw it with the Abraham Accords and Serbia, Kosovo, and the Gulf Rift and Afghanistan. President Trump lays out what he thinks is a very fair deal for both sides. And when he did this with Russia and Ukraine to start with, he gave Putin a chance to save face, to end the war, to stop the killing. And President Trump is just horrified by all the deaths of this war and any war. He's really, you know, he's willing to use military force, but he's really a pacifist. He does not want to see young men and young women dying in the trenches. And so he gave Putin a great deal. Putin rejected the deal, and as President Trump said, tapped him along and negotiated, but without seriousness. And I said, at some point, President Trump is going to lose his patience, and heaven help you if you're an adverse party to President Trump and he loses his patience with you. That is not a good place to be, and he's clearly lost his patience with Russia. I think, you know, we're going to have massive economic sanctions against Russia. Your colleague Larry Kudlow and I called for this you know, two and a half years ago, the week before the invasion. And, you know, Larry was the one who said, if you sanction the Russian Federal Bank, Russian Federation Central Bank, and kick them out of the SWIFT system, their economy is destroyed. Trump has said he'll do that, but he wants the Europeans to cut off their oil purchases. So he's demanding that our allies,
and they are doing that,
burden share. And if the Europeans step up and Hungary and the Slovaks and cut off their oil purchases from Russia and buy American LNG instead, I think we would put massive economic sanctions on Russia. And then on the military front, Putin's going to have a hard time continuing to fight this war, to fight an economic war and a military war at the same time. So I think Trump's run out of patience with them. And I saw this happening. Putin should have taken the deal he was offered in the beginning and run like a bandit.
So remember, when they put the sanctions on India, Vladimir Putin called Trump or talked to Witkoff to relay a message to Trump that maybe there's a way out of this. Alaska happens. They get there. He's like, no, I'm not doing a ceasefire. I'll do a peace thing. We'll do it next week. And then he says, I'm not going to do it. Has incredibly ridiculous demands. And he picked up the pace of the drone attacks. And that's the main thing. And now I think the First Lady, who understands if being an Eastern European and now friends with Mrs. Zelensky, I think the First Lady has influence because she knows the practical life, what it's like practically living under the Russian oppression. She grew up with it, and she understands what they're going through. How do you feel about the president coming out and saying, my advice to those NATO members, when the Russians invade your airspace to shoot them down, he said, do it. And Poland said, roger that. Your thoughts?
Well, listen, if another country, it's one thing if there's a stray aircraft that's in your space by mistake, you don't want to shoot it down. If there's a direct provocation, if a country invades your airspace, which the Russians have been doing now three or four times with Poland, reports on Denmark and in the Baltics.
Romania.
If they purposely invade the airspace of a NATO country, then those weapons should be shot down, because look, we don't know if they're armed or not. So it could be that's the prelude to an attack and on civilians. And going back to the First Lady, your point, look, Mrs. Trump has a real influence over President Trump. I saw this in the first term. She's very quiet about it, but she's a determined woman. She's very smart, and she cares about the children and the civilians more than anything. And I think these drone attacks on the civilians that Putin has launched since Alaska make her sick to her stomach, and I know they make the president sick. I mean, these aren't even battlefield attacks. These are attacks on churches and hospitals and kindergartens. I mean, this is just sick stuff. And I think the First Lady and the president have had enough of it, and I think it's going to mean a lot more support for Ukraine.
So in Gaza, Israel yesterday, they have a bunch of Western European nations recognizing Palestine as a country. Here's Emmanuel Macron, cut 21.
And just perhaps to make it clear on that, I think it's why yesterday 11 countries did recognize Palestine. It was not a decision taken like that, neither by UK nor by Canada nor by France. It's just a big change. President Trump is totally right. Nobody forgets the 7th of October. I went there a few days after, taking families in my hands, and it's...
So I get it. So, I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. So they know that Hamas is still going to be in charge if this war stops. They're going to go recognize Palestine, even though there's no configuration that would be practically to exist now. Hamas, they say, well, the West Bank is Palestinian Authority. No, it isn't. There's still Hamas is all over there. And they are as corrupt can be. What are these other countries thinking? And how does it complicate things?
Well, so Emmanuel Macron is a friend of mine. I like him. I think he's a good man, but he's just totally misguided here, and so are the other Western leaders. Number one, they're trying to show their relevance. And the reason they're trying to get involved in this, Brian, is because it's domestic politics. This is not international affairs, because, as you point out, there's no Palestinian state to recognize. The leaders of the Palestinian state, even if you look at the Palestinian Authority, they haven't had an election in 16 years. And that's on the West Bank. I mean, you've got Hamas, a terrorist organization that may be the worst of the worst, probably worse than Hezbollah. as bad as ISIS with their killing and their nihilism. Yeah. But remember, these are the countries that President Trump was addressing on the mass migration. So these have massive jihadi populations in their countries, these Western countries. I mean, even in Canada, certainly France and England.
And it's affected their foreign policy, Robert, is what you're saying.
100%. They're coming out, they're protesting. The British police can't control them. The French police can't control them. And so this is a way for them to try and buy some domestic peace. But it's an unserious diplomatic effort. No one thinks it's going to go anywhere. And President Trump has been very dismissive of it.
I know. But people do tell me mechanically they can start taking up it will complicate how other countries deal with them and then maybe sanction Israel by the way they're acting. But I look forward to an end to this. Real quick, Robert, you're an expert at getting hostages out. Do you see a path forward for getting the remaining hostages out? The clock's ticking.
I've got some hope, and I've talked to the hostage families, and my heart's been breaking just for 2 years since October 7th. I like Macron, I went to Israel, and I met with hostage families. And President Trump is very concerned about the hostages. We've got to get him out if we can. What's interesting is the deal that Hamas is apparently writing to President Trump about directly, with the letter coming from Doha, is the return of the hostages in exchange for a 60-day ceasefire. That's the deal Witkoff put on the table several months ago. So, kind of like Putin in the Ukraine situation, President Trump gave him the deal. They turned it down. The Israelis have been knocking the heck out of them and taking it to them in Gaza City, destroying the tunnel complexes and really coming after Hamas. And now Hamas is appealing to President Trump with it and trying to take the deal that he offered him several months ago. So there's a glimmer of hope, Brian, that we're going to get the hostages home. I don't mind if there's a ceasefire because, look, one thing we know about the Israelis, if you kill Israelis, you're going to pay the price eventually. We saw that with Munich. We've seen it, throughout Israeli history. So I think the first priority for the Israelis is to get their hostages home, and they can deal with the perpetrators of these terrible crimes over time.
I think it's all coming to a head. Things are really – it's no longer business as usual in either two main conflicts, Ukraine or Gaza. And it's great to get your insight, Robert. Thanks so much.
Hey, God bless you, Brian. Thank you for having me on.
And no problem. When we come back, I'll take some calls, and we're still following the story about the ICE facility that's been – I had three people injured, and they're still trying to figure out what the gunman was up to. He looks like he did take his own life. Bottom of the hour, Rich Lowry. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Don't go anywhere. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They need to stop doing, like we've seen in our own government, and we saw with USAID and others, they need to stop all of this woke nonsense. There are 7 UN agencies focused on climate change. There was a commission called the George Floyd Commission, where Biden allowed UN investigators to come into U.S. cities and pass judgment on our judges and policing, with countries like North Korea and Venezuela weighing in. They need to get, as the president has said, they need to get back to basics, stopping wars, preventing wars, helping him, as the secretary general pledged yesterday, helping him craft these peace deals. And then, separately, there's some people saying just get the heck out, walk away. But there has to be one place in the world where everybody can get together.
I 100% agree. I mean, I know the Republican reflex is always end the UN, and Democrats love it. I never want to end the UN. I think about the relationships and what happened last night. You got a French leader meeting with maybe a small African nation leader, and then you have establishing when these people routine in and out, then foreign secretaries getting to know presidents, and those relationships can quickly quell a crisis before it happens or bring one to a close when it does. And I'm all for those relationships. But just outline 20 things that need to be done and let's start working on them. Rich Lowry next, Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Erica Kirk forgave the man who shot her husband. She forgave him. That is an example we should follow. Yeah. Forgiveness from a grieving widow. It touched me deeply. And I hope it touches many. And if there's anything we should take from this tragedy to carry forward, I hope it can be that, and not this.
So Jimmy Kimmel last night came back without a lot of his affiliates. Sinclair and Nexstar said, no, we're not going to carry it. I don't know if last night was enough for them or why they even did it. They said maybe they were tired of the anti-Trump stuff, but the next monologue after they went to break was typical Trump is terrible. So he's not going to balance it out. And I'm not sure if that's okay with ABC, but let's see what happens. Either way, he came back. I'm not sure how great the ratings would be because half the country couldn't see it, except for on YouTube. I think there were 4 million views. So that's a good sign for ABC. And he kind of indicated too, he goes, I'm going to sign up for my Disney again. That's a way of saying those people that resigned their Disney account, sign up again. Rich Lowry, this is interesting times. You're editor of National Review. And I know you're watching all this. Why would I bring up a late night show? Because people were equating it to the murder of Charlie Kirk and Jimmy Kimmel in the middle of it. First, on the comments last night, from what you saw, do you think the page is turned?
Well, I think he said mostly the appropriate things. And that was excellent what he said about Erica Kirk. That's what everyone should think and feel about her incredible moment. I mean, you can only do that, what she did, by the grace of God. So I think everyone in the country was touched by it. But do we need another kind of progressive late night show host? You know, if it were just the law of averages, and if this game were on the up and up, late night comedians on broadcast, a third would be noticeably progressive, a third would be noticeably independent, and a third would be noticeably conservative, and that would be fair. And that would kind of represent the country. Instead, we have this monoculture on broadcast. So I don't like what Brendan Carr did. I don't think he should have stuck his nose in it. I think he should have let nature take its course. But this is a medium that's dying. And, you know, Kimmel's ratings just been down, down, down. He'll get a bump from this, but it'll continue to go down, as you point out. Maybe I don't see Sinclair bringing him back, even if Nexstar does. So the ratings will be even lower, and certainly I'm not going to be watching.
Why Sinclair? Do you know something about the organization or –
Well, they're more conservative, and their asks were pretty strong, right?
Oh,
apologize,
yeah.
and contribute to Turning Point USA, which I never see him doing that. So that's just my guess. I don't have the inside knowledge.
Crazy. Okay, so let's say that moves on, and you talk about freedom of speech, and Jimmy Kimmel pointed out that Ted Cruz went to bat for him, and so did Mitch McConnell. And because they don't think that the FCC should be coming down on him. The flip side is I listened to Steve Bannon the other day, which is something I rarely do. And he says, if you look at the late night shows, they are really DNC outlets. They're not, and you know, MSNBC, everybody knows what to expect, mostly CNN. But when you look at the late night shows, they're all for the Democratic Party. Literally, Gavin Newsom sat with Stephen Colbert and talked about how Sean Hannity is too much for Trump. While he's sitting with Stephen Colbert,
yeah.
And he just let him go, making stuff up, throwing out his expletives because someone told him to be a tough guy. So there's no Republicans welcome, and it is a national license. So it used to be a self-regulating industry because people want ratings and don't want to alienate, as Jay Leno said. It doesn't matter who you vote for or what I feel. I want all of you to watch. It just looks like old three said, no, I just want certain people to watch. And how does that gel with the FCC mandate?
Yeah, so the mandate is quite vague and quite broad, the public interest. And I believe the Supreme Court decades ago basically said that's whatever the FCC says. I just don't think policing speech and what they actually say and the nature of the program. I don't think that's appropriate. I think it's appropriate for Brendan Carr to give like a general speech, like pointing out the bias and saying, oh, we hope the networks will eventually deal with this or be fairer. But I just think, Brian, this is like so many things. It's like tech, when people complain about tech monopolies, it's kind of a self-correcting thing because they've lost their you know, a huge amount of their audience. And where's it gone? You know, Jimmy Kimmel used to, when he did the Man Show, he was like a manosphere podcaster before anyone knew such a thing could exist or would exist, right? They've gone to Lex Fridman and to Joe Rogan and to all these individual voices that the FCC has no role regulating. The FCC's role is eventually going to go away too as broadcast declines. It's just they don't have their hooks in anyone who's on cable or does podcasting or is on social media. So I think they've lost their audience to other sources, and it's just not important anymore. It just doesn't really matter that much what Jimmy Kimmel said. If Johnny Carson had come out as a Democrat, you know, 40 years ago, that would have been huge, but we don't live in that world anymore.
So Google, just let's build on that point. Google reinstates YouTube accounts that it banned and admitted that the President Biden's administration pressured them to censor speech that did not violate YouTube rules. And they say in retrospect, it was unacceptable and wrong, but they were hostage to the power in the White House. So we keep hearing about Donald Trump's power.
Yeah.
Tell Google, hardly a right-wing organ, say this. They say they permanently banned from political speech the ability to be reinstated, and the big tech company admitted it once faced pressure from Biden on when it came to COVID-19 and other content. Google detailed its remarkable shift in a document first obtained by Fox News. Here's Jim Jordan, Cut 46.
They all did it, Sean. The Biden administration pressured all these platforms to censor. They, in fact, did it. You felt it firsthand. We suspected Google was no different than Twitter and Facebook. And of course, we were right. They admitted that this was going on. They pledged to reinstate anyone who's kicked off. People like Dan Bongino, high profile people, were their channel was taken from them. And the other thing is there are thousands of other people, your cousin, your friend out there who may not even know what was going on, but they got censored as well. And then, of course, Google has pledged that they will. YouTube has pledged that they will never use this fact checker that other platforms.
So you understand what's going on. These companies were pressured. They kept their mouth shut. Maybe they didn't mind being pressured. But now they're saying, we don't like it, and we're going to be transparent about it. The guy that deserves all the credit is Elon Musk. He bought Twitter, great expense, and then exposed it with the Twitter files.
Yeah, that's when the ice really began to crack. So look, the Google news is not surprising, right? We've heard the same thing from people at what was formerly known as Twitter. We've heard the same thing from people at Facebook. And this is why, Brian, you know, there are huge swaths of the right who are like, they did it to us. Why shouldn't we do it to them? And that argument has a lot of traction with Republicans because it's so true, whether it's a lawfare or what Brendan Carr was trying to do with Jimmy Kimmel, that all this has precedent and the other side did it. And they're basically unrepentant about it, right? We haven't heard anyone say, well, now that Trump's targeting Adam Schiff, maybe we shouldn't have targeted him. No, and they do it again. So it just goes to the hypocrisy of the other side.
President Trump really did a 180 when it comes to Ukraine. I hope he stays with it. Putin pushed him to this point. President gave him every opportunity. We know that the president's unpredictable on purpose. Do you believe that he is going to fully get off the Putin, the opportunities closed for Vladimir Putin?
I'm not 100% sure of anything in terms of where he is on Ukraine and Russia, but
you have to be shocked about what he said yesterday.
Oh yeah, surprised. Yeah. Now, and I don't think it's true. I'm doubtful that Ukraine can take back all the territory. But the way I read it is, one, obviously he's just had it up to his neck with Vladimir Putin and is fully aware of who he is, and that he's not going to be able to charm him out of being who he is. And two, that if there's going to be a deal, we've talked about this a lot, this is the tack you have to take. All right, Vladimir, I understand you're not going to play ball, so we're going to arm Ukraine to the hilt. We're going to remove all restrictions. It's going to be extremely painful for you. You're going to continue to have massive losses and economic pain, and you're going to make no gains. Maybe actually Ukraine is going to take back territory. So if that's what you want, let's do it. Game on. And then when you're ready to talk, let's talk. I think that's an approach where a year from now, maybe you can get a deal, but you weren't going to get one without pressuring him and seeming overly desperate for a deal, which unfortunately the president did seem at times.
No question, because he really thought he could bring both sides. I don't know what kind of deal it was going to be, but he just thought, okay, I don't care. You know, have your rhetoric. We'll meet next week. And then when next week never happened and then their demands were ridiculous, the president realized this guy is not in it. This deal is done. So Moscow, this is on Politico right now. Russia's answered Trump, saying they're a bear, not a paper tiger. Russia is by no means a tiger. Russia is traditionally seen as a bear. There's no such thing as paper bears. Russia is a real bear. There is nothing paper about it. The Kremlin official was responding to Trump's overtly pro-Ukrainian remarks. The rhetoric shift raised questions around the world on whether Trump has decisively changed his posture. Moscow brushed off Trump's broadside. We'll see. If it's coupled with action real soon, they can't brush it off. And we'll see how bad that economy actually is, right?
Yep, absolutely. And look, you know, Trump can be erratic and shift around too much on things. But also, this goes to a really good aspect of his governance, so willing to change as circumstances change and not being stuck with one approach. He tried it. You know, he gave it a real college try, didn't work, and now it looks like he's going to try something else. And I think this approach has a better chance of working.
Kamala Harris's book tour continues. She will sell books. But will she sell herself? Cut 37.
Would you run again? You'd like to run again?
That's not in my immediate not focus. Right. I'm doing my book tour. And please, everybody, come out. I'm going to a lot of cities.
So she has no real solid answer on that. But to me, she's definitely doing this to run again. What else is she going to do? What do you think?
I think she's definitely running, or think she's running. We'll see whether she can get out of the starting gate even. You know, her fundraising will have a lot to do with it. Look, I give her credit. This is interesting, right? This is not a typical boring campaign book. There's a lot of dishing in there. But, you know, you just see it in the interviews. She's just not very good at this, and she's never going to be very good at this. So I don't think she's going to be their nominee in 2028, or I'd be totally shocked.
How angry do you think most Democrats are that they have to deal with Kamala Harris's books and the comments she made on Walt, on Shapiro, on Newsom, on Obama? You could sit there and go, we don't want to look in the past. Sorry, she is. And she's got a national book tour and she's talking about you. So you can't duck it. So that's not good for Democrats.
Yeah, you can hear the irritation in all their voices, Shapiro and others, when they're talking about her and the book. But I guess her approach is that, all right, I'm burning the bridges with all those Democrats, because if they win the nomination, they're elected, I don't want to be Secretary of Transportation or whatever they would offer me. And I'm just all in to win. And then if I win, they have to come around, even if they're annoyed by what I said in the book. So I don't think that's a crazy approach, actually. And I don't think it'll work for her, but it's not crazy.
And the fundamental thing is, she's not a talented politician. We're not even at the point where you disagree. She cannot speak. She cannot get out of cogent thought. She doesn't have a mission. She doesn't have a program. She wants to be queen of America. She wants the ceremonial position. I don't think she wants to work. She hasn't put in the time to get the talking points of her own book out.
Yeah, and I remember I was talking to Democrats at various events last year, and they say she worked so hard for this nomination. She called 100 people, right? You know, if one of us had to call 100 people just to get a presidential nomination, we'd do it. You know, I can do that. But going to Iowa, you know, and grinding it out in Iowa and New Hampshire and being exhausted all the time and doing six events a day, no, I don't think I'd want to do that. So you're right. It was handed to her on a platter, and someone was making this point on Fox, the pollster whose name escapes me at the moment, Democratic pollster who used to work for Clinton. But he was saying she should be so full of gratitude, because how often does it happen that you're just handed a presidential nomination, right? This is like the most prized political possession in America.
And a billion dollars.
And a billion dollars. Yeah.
And it's Mark Penn.
Yeah, Mark Penn, exactly, yeah.
All right, Rich, I look forward to your next column in the National Review. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we're going to finish up this hour strong. A lot going on, including there's going to be a lot of action across town right here in New York City, because Zelensky and the Iranian leader are on the docket to speak today. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Recently, we asked some people about sharing their New York Times accounts.
My name is Dana. I am a subscriber to the New York Times, but my husband isn't. And it would be really nice to be able to share a recipe or an article or compete with him in Wordle or Connections. Thank you.
Dana, we heard you. Introducing the New York Times Family Subscription. One subscription, up to four separate logins for anyone in your life. Find out more at nytimes.com/family.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My takeaway from what happened yesterday is, first, Donald Trump loves a winner. And what he's seeing in the toughness of President Zelensky and the Ukrainian people, I think, has impressed him. He said it pretty directly. These are brave people, and they're fighting for their rights. Second thing is, Donald Trump senses weakness more than any politician I can think of. And my sense is that he feels that Russia is weakening. You know, he has the best intelligence in the world, and when he says, I think the Russians are having trouble with their economy, I think they're having trouble with their gasoline supply, I'm assuming he's basing that on real information. And the final thing, Joe, I would say is that Trump's policy has needed consistency and organization from the beginning. You can't say one thing one day and a week later it's different and expect to have a coherent policy. If he follows through on what he said yesterday, this war is going to have a different trajectory, and one that I think Europeans will celebrate, you know, with real passion. But President Trump does need to organize his administration and deliver on the things that he said pretty forcefully yesterday.
I agree. And again, Dave Ignatius is so smart. He just stopped being one of those people. He's so unorthodox, I can't stand, doesn't know what he's doing. And that's what happened with Friedman, Thomas Friedman in New York Times. As smart as he is and as connected as he is, Trump is so unorthodox and unpredictable, he just can't tolerate. Dave Ignatius says, okay, I get it now. I'm not going to judge. I'm going to report. And I'm going to look at Trump. I'm going to look at the world, see where it was and what the other decisions were, because he's got four on, four off, now four on. And then I'm going to see how this plays out. And he was on our show saying, you know, there is inconsistency. I get that, because it's not inconsistency from 30,000 feet. It's inconsistency. If you get down in the nitty-gritty, it's, I'm going to try to bring peace here. I'm going to try to do that. I'm talking to Vladimir Putin. Wait, I thought you were for Ukraine. Listen, I got to talk to the other side. Well, you got to be for Ukraine. No, I'm going to talk to all sides. What's the goal? Stop the fighting. Can't do that from one side. And now he realizes that Putin made it so easy for him, that he is so clearly not into peace and amping things up. And I agree, Dave Ignatius is so astute in saying Trump doesn't just say things. He doesn't say things without being backed up by something he saw that they can win. And there was a report in one, whether it was Axios and Politico, that chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was with General Kellogg in the Oval Office. And he said, I want to tell you, Mr. President, you know, Ukraine is winning. And they go, what are you talking about? He goes, think about it. Russia is not winning. And he goes, watch this. And in come General Kane. And General Kane reportedly backed him up on that. Now, then if you give him economic stuff, which the president knows backwards and forwards, and he thinks the world runs on their economic needs, he says these guys can't sustain it forever. At the same time, people are upset by it, including Dana Perino said to me last night, I couldn't believe he gave China a pass. But why would he do that if anyone can shut off the spigot in Russia, and they won't do it directly, like they could slow it down? It is China. How do you get their attention? The economy. What are you in the middle of? Trade talks. See how it's all related? And evidently, in the meetings yesterday, he was zeroing in. He goes, what do you need, to Zelensky? What? How much do you need? What do you have? What is getting there? What is not getting there? And went into detail.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. And for your sake, unless you're a world leader, you're probably better off not being where I am. And that is in New York City, where everything is gummed up. The traffic is virtually stopped. You never know when you're going to be driving and be just shut out of going across the city as if we don't have lives. But that's what happens when the United Nations got built here in the 1940s. This hour, we're going to be joined in Ukraine by Daniel Bilak. He's a member of the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine. And standing by is former governor of Virginia, Jim Gilmore. And he also served as U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Man, we want to get their perspective about all that's going on there. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man, nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make.
But he said he was an unaffiliated individual. What do you mean he's unaffiliated? We know he's got his Antifa links, and the people that he was subscribed to were all left-wingers. His parents said that, but it's okay. Kimmel back to work, and I think that's a good thing. We have his comeback highlights.
Number two.
Would you run again? You like to run again?
That's not in my immediate not focus. Right. I'm doing my book tour. And please, everybody, come out. I'm going to a lot of cities.
Still can't answer the simplest question. Dems in trouble as Kamala's book forces them to relive their recent past and the Biden years. Stats show the midterms, which historically flipped the power back to the party out of power, are trending away from the Democrats. We have the latest on the book tour causing hell for the left.
Number one.
The other side can fight, too, and they've proven that. Maybe it's it could be that Russia's a paper tiger. I really don't feel that way. Let them get their land back.
Do you think that NATO countries should shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter their airspace?
Yes, I do.
That is pretty significant. I love President Trump that changed his tactics and goes all in for Ukraine and calls out Russia. Details to come as Zelensky addresses the UN today. And the president blasts the organization for wasting its very valuable charter. Joining us now is Jim Gilmore. Governor, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for the chance to be on your show.
No problem. Your thoughts about the president calling out the UN yesterday?
Well, first of all, the president, I think, was trying to school them a little bit and to encourage them to actually amount to something. It needs to be understood that you have a Security Council with vetoes by China and by Russia. But my position, Brian, is as a former ambassador to a multinational organization, is the value of the UN is its platform, which we saw yesterday when the president commanded the attention of the entire world by his speech at the UN. But in terms of being an action organization, it's very difficult to get multinational organizations to be action organizations. But look at the ability to deliver a message. That's what you do every day. And that's what the president was able to do at the United Nations.
Here's what Marco Rubio told us on Fox and Friends yesterday. Cut six.
If you look at what's happening in Gaza with Hamas and everything that's happened there with Israel taking them on, what role is the UN playing? None. We're going to try here, even as close to home in the Western Hemisphere, in a place like Haiti, that's been overrun by gangs that control that country and has destabilized the region. The U.S. is asking for the UN to step up and play a very important role. We have a lot of support, but it looks like China might stand in the way of this effort to bring that about. The UN will play no role if they do that. So I think what the president's going to do is challenge the UN to find its meaning and its purpose and its utility as an organization, because it doesn't seem to be doing the job, and it's pretty good at spending a lot of money. The UN has a lot of potential, but it's not living up to it right now.
He's 100% right. We didn't even bring up the fact that some people involved with the UN were involved in the October 7th attack, and they were funding and supplying material to Hamas during the invasion of Gaza.
You know, it's pretty healthy what the president did, and what Secretary Rubio had to say. It's very healthy.
Yeah, I think we just knocked off. Yeah, we just knocked off. We'll get him back in a second. But Governor Jim Gilmore, he's got the domestic knowledge, and I'm going to get into that. But he also has the international experience, and I enjoy that. Also, there's something about purple state governors that lean blue that's interesting, because they really have a sense of what the other side wants and needs, like Governor Hogan. Whatever you think of Governor Hogan, he had to exist and thrive in a very blue state as a Republican governor. So he has to reach across the aisle, or he wouldn't even have a career. I want you to hear what President Zelensky said about the president's new new stance when it comes to his country. Now he's realizing that Vladimir Putin was given a chance and he's not taking it. Cut 16.
It is a big shift. Russia has been moving toward a confrontation Europe.
Cut 10.
I think we have a better relation than before. And I think we didn't have close relation because we didn't have maybe time. I don't know other reasons. It's good that we have often phone calls and meetings. And I think the fact that Putin was lying to President Trump so many times also made a difference between us.
Because it seemed to understand that one guy's telling you the truth and the other guy's not. Governor Gilmore, we just lost you. We got you back. But the president changed his stance. He had very strong, big-time questions about what's going on militarily, economically with Russia, and what's going on actually on the ground. And he's getting reports that Russia is not the behemoth or doing nearly as well as he thought they were. So how do you feel about the president's change in stance?
Well, look, I support whether it's a change or not. I certainly support the president's position on this, and I have done so for years now. Have been talking about the absolute vital interest of the United States in the success in Ukraine. If Ukraine is toppled by Putin, it threatens all the rest of Europe, both politically and militarily, and the Europeans know that. The president is entitled to a great deal of credit for bringing the Europeans to the table militarily and economically and spending and so on. And I think all that is a very positive thing. So yesterday, his expression at the UN, which basically said, look, let's get real here. Putin's not real. By the way, Brian, all reports that we've seen are the Russians are not doing well. And they're losing a million people, casualties and dead. They're not making progress on the ground. They've been hoping that they could gain diplomatically something, but they're not able to do that with Trump taking the position he's taken.
So, Governor, I want to bring you back to domestic politics. I really hope the president stays strong with Ukraine, lets him hit inside Russia. And a lot of people say, well, aren't you afraid of escalating? All Russia does is escalate. And now they're breaching the airspace of NATO allies. They're testing you. It's like the guy in a bar. He just tapes tape and swing at you. It takes a swing at your friends. At one point, you have to stand up and saying, I'm for peace, is not going to work.
Well, look, that's right. You know, the Russians started this war. Their strategic goal is the conquest of Ukraine, which then becomes a stepping stone to Putin's ultimate goal, which is the reassembly of the old Russian-type, Soviet-type empire. And that is his goal, and it has to be remembered at all times. And friendly relations between people will not work with Putin. That's now perfectly clear, I think, to President Trump. And by basically saying, look, the Ukrainians can get back their territory, that is a reaffirmation of the international order that basically says you don't invade your enemies and try to conquer them. And let's not forget the war crimes that the Russians are doing. They stand on no moral ground here. So I think that President Trump's position is a good one. I have supported that position for years, including on this show. I support it now. I think the president is right about this.
So I want to bring it to domestic politics. And here's Governor Gavin Newsom. He, in those preliminary polls, he seems to be the most popular Democrat. And which blows me away because you're a governor. He's been a terrible governor. Almost on every metric, he's been a failure. He's gone agenda-driven, and all this does is driven up gas and oil prices. And he's been pro-illegal immigration, and that has hurt his job market. He's been pro-raising taxes, and that hurt how many companies go into one of the finest states in the union. Here he is yesterday with this tough guy act, Cut 39.
You've got this new communication strategy, or at least new for a Democrat. It's called, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, being interesting. And
by the way, thank you for acknowledging. Yes,
well,
congratulations.
You got to. You earned that. You earned that. Sure.
Yeah, no, and that, the strategy is inspiration, desperation, right? The two driving forces of life. And everything we were doing to try to break through wasn't working anymore. And so we decided to do something, to your point, a novel called humor. And I got to say, oftentimes Democrats, we're a little, we're not as humorous as we should be.
A little stiff.
It could be a little stiff.
Yeah.
And so we thought we'd have some fun with it. But I never imagined it would break through like it has and get under the skin of the President of the United States and some of my friends.
It really hasn't. And I find it interesting that he keeps taking shots at the president when the president is guy, he's got three more years left. That's not going to be his opponent. And he's got 2 years left to be an effective governor, and he's not. Isn't it hard if you alienate the president to be an effective governor?
Well, it sure doesn't help. Look, the governors are the chief executives of the individual states. They run the government. They set the policies together with their legislatures. They're just like the U.S., except that they're in their own individual states. Governors are, you know, very, very significant. But I think that that this particular governor, Newsom, is not going to do great by trying to be a late night comic. I just don't think that's suggests the seriousness that a chief executive of state ought to have. If he has a policy that's anti-Trump, he needs to explain what that is. And I just don't think he's doing that because his policies are not good, Brian. We know that.
So let's talk about your local race. It looks like your lieutenant governor is trailing about by 8 points to Abigail Spanberger, who has herself as a moderate Republican. Is she? And do you think that Lieutenant Governor Winsome will close the gap?
Yeah, I think that the Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears, the Republican candidate, is closing the gap. She's beginning to focus on the real issues that I think matter to Virginians. She has a good ticket under her. The John Reed, who's running for lieutenant governor, is a superb candidate and a personal friend of mine. The attorney general, the incumbent, Jason Meares, is really a no-brainer for reelect, in my view. Now, look, Virginia is challenging these days because of the strong Northern Virginia vote, and I understand that. But Governor Youngkin, and for that matter myself, prove that a Republican can win in Virginia if we speak the right issues and speak to the concerns of the people of the Commonwealth.
And we'll see if that'll happen. Governor Youngkin's going to appear at a Turning Point event. How important is that? And how would you characterize his performance over the last 4 years?
Well, look, I think that he's done well. He has had a hostile legislature controlled by the Democrats, which have blocked some of his initiatives, not all of his initiatives. Some of his initiatives have been quite good. And I think that he's provided a good face and voice for the state of Virginia. So he certainly wants to have a future in politics, and I think he's positioning to do that.
Yeah, let's see. I think the only other position I would imagine would be for president. Do you think he's a legitimate presidential contender in a couple of years?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're the governor of the state of Virginia, it's a very significant place. Lots of population, lots of diversity, lots of different economic power. Lots of increased opportunities in technology and other places like that. So there's a lot of powerhouse behind this governor. He's got, of course, a lot of personal wealth. He's a handsome and affable guy. People like him. So, sure, I think he's going to test the water in the presidential race. Of course, there'll be a lot of people out there running, won't there?
Right, there will be. A lot of people are going to be looking at the New Jersey governor's race, which is tied, and Jim Gilmore. You'll be looking at your state's race over in Virginia. Thanks so much, Governor.
Good. Thanks for the chance to be on, Brian. See you soon.
You got it. 1-866-408-7667. By the way, I'll be in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday night. Hope all the WRVA listeners, LNI listeners will be able to come down. NIS too, WNIS over in Virginia Beach. Not that far of a drive. Okay, it is, but we'll see you down there. We're going to have a great show. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back with a few minutes here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to go to Ukraine in a matter of moments. There's a lot of things going on. I mean, I have one of these things where I set up my notes and I put little tabs there because I have no idea what's going to be hot by the time I get on the air. I'm up at 3 in the morning. Another thing that's interesting that's happening with gerrymandering. So Newsom once says, I'm going to gerrymander and answer back GOP pushes to get more, to gerrymander, get more Republican districts. So he's got to put it up for a resolution. It will be just for one term. And it would have to counter what Arnold Schwarzenegger did, and that was hire an independent counsel to gerrymander accurately, which best represents the state. And that gerrymandering gave 7 seats to Republicans, which is a little less than the proportion because they have 40% of the population in California is Republican. So Newsom wants to legislate them all 7 out. Schwarzenegger is taking on Newsom, and he has had it because he was proud of this legacy. and it's called Prop 50. He is rolling out multi-million dollars worth of ads. Listen to Cut 48.
The politicians want their power back.
That's what they want to do, is take us backwards. This is why it is important for you to vote no on Proposition 50.
California voters established an independent commission led by citizens to stop rigged elections. Prop 50 cancels this historic reform, putting the politicians back in charge.
The Constitution does not start with the politicians, it starts with we the people.
Trust citizens, not politicians. No on 50.
Democracy. We got to protect it and we got to go and fight for it.
So experts predict $200 million. $200 million we spent on California's ballot prop. Now, keep in mind, these guys are buried in debt. And they have $200 million to just pull out. And who knows, from donations or whatever, where it's used in order to try to win. Early polling suggests voters are siding with Newsom's attempt to sideline an independent redistricting commission. But Schwarzenegger's a big fighter. AOC is fighting for the gerrymandering. Cut 49.
California, you know we don't back down from a fight. And this November, the fight belongs to you. Donald Trump is redrawing election maps to force through a Congress that only answers to him, not the people. If he gets away with it, all bets are off for our health care, our paychecks, and our freedoms.
All right, fine, and she does it in Spanish, too. It's being bankrolled by Charles Munger Jr., a major GOP donor who underwrote the ballot measures helping Arnold. Munger has already donated $30 million to the campaign opposing the November ballot measure. The other opposition effort was raised more than $5 million. So let's see if this would be a huge setback for Gavin Newsom. Now, keep in mind, Trump hasn't stopped at Texas. He's also for New East. He's looking to squeeze something out of Missouri, Indiana. He has not mentioned Florida yet, but they're looking at a few other states where they feel as though it doesn't accurately project the population in the city. You know, obviously they want to get more seats. That's what they're trying to do. But they also think that they've been underrepresented. And what people have brought up that are fundamentally against this is that if you look at the last census led by Joe Biden, it was full of errors because of the pandemic, let alone the fact that they counted illegal immigrants. And where do the illegal immigrants go? To the blue states that are sanctuary cities. And if all of a sudden those states have more people, they get more representation in Congress. That's what Trump, maybe you could say it's rationalization, but everything I just said is 100% true. So that's why they want to redo the census within 10 years, because they feel as though the last census did those two things. Wasn't accurate. People were not comfortable doing, you know, getting out of their house, filling out a ballot. They weren't mailing anything in. So therefore, the census wasn't nearly as accurate as it's been in the past, let alone using having campaigns to get people to do it. Why? Because if you campaign to say, maybe you fill out your census or mail it, maybe you're telling people to expose themselves to the pandemic. You know that Democratic line of thinking? That's the line of thinking. We talk Ukraine when we come back. Zelensky is also speaking at the UN. We'll bring you back some highlights. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You're seeing the president's frustration and disappointment, frankly, with Putin. He has made innumerable calls. We had the summits in Saudi Arabia, in Turkey, in Alaska, obviously. And look, at the end of the day, Putin has to end this war. The president has made it very clear his intent. And what you're seeing now is you're seeing, with the president's urging, you're seeing Europe increasingly stepping up. They're now committing 5% of their GDP, which for years, right. It was not only, it wasn't even just half, it was just a third that was meeting the bare minimum of 2%. So they're stepping up, they're buying our weapons, they're taking more responsibility for their security, and eventually, one way or another, Putin's going to get the message. And one other point, Brian, that I think is that we have to hammer, and the president hammered home in his speech yesterday, Europe can't be buying Russian oil and gas at the same time they're demanding help to fight this war.
Right. And I think they got that message. Let's hope. Daniel Bilak joins us now from Ukraine, member of the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine, former chief investment advisor to the prime minister. Daniel, your thoughts about what Michael Waltz said as the new ambassador to the United Nations?
Yeah, Brian, thanks. I think he's right on. Everybody thought that President Trump was going to throw us under the bus. And I always tell people, don't listen to what he says, see what he does. And I really hope that that the actions actually match the rhetoric of this week. I mean, this is a very significant statement by the president. And, you know, at the same time, he was really putting it on Europe and NATO to take the lead on this, which is fine. But United States is really the biggest part of NATO, and we still really need the United States in this game.
No doubt about it. The president made it clear yesterday that he has a change of he's got his change of strategy. He, after meeting with President Zelensky and getting into great detail, I had a chance to talk to President Zelensky for the first time yesterday, one-on-one after his interview with Brett, who was in our building, and he kind of backed this up. He said they had a very substantive meeting. He was asking specific questions. How many drones are they sending? How many do you need? Where are they located? He had his whole team zeroed in. And then he put this Truth Social up. Says the economic situation, he goes, after getting to know fully and understand the Ukraine-Russia military and economic situation, after seeing the economic trouble it is causing Russia, I think Ukraine, with the support of the EU, is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in the original form. With time and patience and the financial support of Europe, in particular NATO, the original borders from where the war started is very much an option. Russia has been fighting aimlessly for 3.5 years, a war that should never have taken place. A real military power less than a week to would have taken a real military power less than a week to win. Now, you guys aren't going to get beat by anybody, but you guys have fought, and you've really he's never said anything bad about the way you guys fight. But I think he was dismissive about the possibility of being successful. Now he's not. How do you feel, Dan?
Well, Brian, you've been great to have me on your show since March of 2022. And if there's one consistent message that I've made, is that this war is winnable. You know, Russia is a paper tiger. And now we're starting to see more and more of the mainstream media and media in general talking about the fact that Russia's got big, big problems economically. And, you know, it's great that we are able to buy American kit. The Europeans are buying it for us. It's actually helping the American economy. But much more than that, we really have been able to take it to them largely through tech, our technological development. We've been developing at a blistering pace, Brian. You know, we're iterating 3-4 generations of technological advancement in very short order, like within 6 months. You know, even the United States, I was talking to a former U.S. Major General, and he says his assessment after being in Ukraine was that the U.S. is 3 years behind Ukraine in this technological advancement. You know, as I've said many, many times, we win when we fight asymmetrically. We will never win against Russia on a force-on-force basis. There's just too many of them. But we have held the lines, being outgunned and outmanned, largely through tech. And, you know, I see it even in my own unit, in my own battalion, where I serve in the Territorial Defense Forces. You know, at the beginning of the war, we were hunting for sabotage reconnaissance groups, you know, with rifles, and then we started learning how to use NLAWs and javelins to hit tanks. And now, frankly, you know, I don't know what to do because it's all drones, and the people in my unit are now 18, 20-year-olds, and they know how to use this stuff, and that's what's making the big difference. But you know, it comes back to U.S. leadership as well. You know, where if President Trump wants to really help us. And he has been by emphasizing cutting off Russian oil and gas imports into the EU. But we really need the Americans and your people to get behind further sanctions on Russia. Russia, this war started in Russia and it will end in Russia. And you know,
but
the,
you guys
the
are hitting
for,
the
se-
you guys are hitting the energy sector. You're hitting the refineries,
absolutely,
and, right? So, and that is really making a difference with long lines at the gas stations. And I'm sure, according to reports, the winter's coming, and Russia's got a brutal winter. So is that there's been a strategy to your attacks in Russia?
100%. We in the last 3 weeks, Brian, we've taken out over 20% of Russia's oil and oil refining capacity.
Wow.
I mean that's huge. And you know, we need more sanctions on this shadow fleet that they have. You know, taking on Indians, India, and putting pressure on Turkey and others that are buying cheap Russian oil and then reselling it. They're arbitraging it. It continues to support the Russian killing machine. And, you know, if the United States was to put further sanctions on Russia, we could end this war much, much faster.
So when no one has to tell you that they breached Estonia's airspace, Romania's airspace, Poland's airspace, and now Belgium's, and it looks like they stopped air traffic in Belgium because of the drones incursions. The president was asked directly yesterday, what advice do you give NATO allies? Would you say to shoot down Russian drones and aircraft that they breach space? He said yes. Here's what Ambassador Waltz said to me today. Cut 55.
We talked about this in my first Security Council meeting, which was just Monday, that the Estonians called. And between the violations of Romanian airspace, Polish airspace, and now Estonian airspace, look, I think Putin, the Russians, should take the message from the president. He's not messing around. He's incredibly serious. The Iranians learned painfully that he will use sticks as well as carrots.
Will you bring that message to the Russian ambassador in the U.N.?
We just brought that message with the Russians present just yesterday.
So I just want to bring you up to date, Dan. I'm hoping the circle closes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the point you just made, Brian, goes to the heart of the matter, is that this is not Ukraine's war against Russia. This is Russia's war against the West, the NATO, the United States. This is the rhetoric that comes out of Russia, the propaganda that they're spewing out to their people, and the West needs to understand that they're at war with Russia through Russia's waging a hybrid war against the West through disinformation, through sabotage, and if nobody stands up to them, they're just going to keep pushing. That's what dictators do. You know, someone said that, you know, appeasement is giving in to the aggressor, hoping, like feeding a crocodile, hoping you're going to be the last one to be eaten. And you know, this we need our allies to really get behind us and continue supporting us the way they have been, but really hitting Russia economically. It is very, very weak. And he's on top. The thing is, too, Brian, that Putin can't stop this war now. He can't stop. He's so far in, his entire economy is on war footing. All his people are behind it because they're terrified of what's going to happen if they lose. And the keys to the kingdom, the keys to peace in Europe, are to defeat the Russian army in Ukraine. And they are eminently defeatable. They don't really have a ground army. They just have masses of meat that they throw at our front lines. And, you know, it 1917, at the end of World War One, Russia had 4 million men under arms and the Russian army collapsed. The soldiers just said, we're done with this. They shot their officers. They threw down their rifles and they went home. And this can be repeated. Things happen in war.
And, you know, the thing is, too, the Russians came back and said, we're not a paper tiger, we're a bear, and had a sarcastic comment. But when they realize that the president's not talking, maybe not even taking Putin's call, I imagine. And then if they start moving with some offensive, some really painful sanctions, and they make it clear that weapons are going to start flooding in again. And the president got his back. He said, I can't wait. You know, listen, we're $37 trillion in debt. We got a great economy, but there's no way our books are balancing. So at home, the president's got an audience that says we're going to focus at home. And when NATO stepped up and says, we'll buy it from you and we're giving it to Ukraine, then the president's thoroughly covered. We'll make it, you'll buy it, you'll use it, you'll build up your own defense, and it works. So that when it becomes clear to the Russians that we're in, that they're not going to manipulate Trump if they ever were, I think that could really get a frustration inside the Russian forces, at least I hope. Dave Ignatius, you know the Washington Post is not a fan of any Republican, or certainly not the president. Dave Ignatius said this yesterday, cut 19.
I'd say there's hope. There's not yet confidence. That's the question that I'm seeing in my messages overnight. There's a fear that, as the Russian deputy ambassador to the United Nations said yesterday, don't get too excited about one tweet, or in this case, one Truth Social post. I mean, that's not a change in policy. And to truly execute a change in policy that would allow Ukraine to win, to take back territory, there'll have to be significant changes in how the U.S. and Europe supply weapons, the nature of the weapons that they supply. Those are all questions for the future. But you could see in the series of statements from Trump his frustration, his anger, and his sense that Vladimir Putin, in addition to insulting him in his mind, also can be had, is weak enough that he can be rolled.
So the president's got his own personal reputation on the line. He feels it. And I think his wife is a big advocate for Ukraine.
Yeah, the first lady has been front and center on this, especially on the issue of the genocide against Ukrainian children. You've been really great on this, Brian, talking about the 20,000 kids that were kidnapped from their families in Ukraine and taken and put up for adoption in Russia. I mean, it's just horrific. But, you know, it comes back to the same point that we can win this war. And we are taking back territory. Russia launched this big, highly publicized counteroffensive this summer and ended up taking a couple hundred kilometers of territory that we are now taking back. They've petered out. We're taking back some of the territory that they took this summer.
Wow.
We're pushing them back, and it comes back to the point: this war is winnable.
Lastly, the biggest army in Europe is Russia. You know who the second biggest is?
I mean, Ukraine for sure.
Yeah. So
we have a larger army than the next four European armies put together.
Exactly. And anyone who thinks that this doesn't matter to America, do you want to let Russia absorb Ukraine and that fighting force that you have, the finest fighting force in Europe? Why would you? So if anyone says, well, what do we care? I've never been to Ukraine. If you're listening to us around the country, understand that this does affect us directly, and you have to be thinking very small not to understand that. Daniel, thanks so much. Best of luck that this Truth Social is followed by more and more action.
Thanks, Brian. God bless the people of the United States. Thank you for your support.
You got it. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Oh, I never would have imagined, like Ben Shapiro, Clay Travis, Candace Owens, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, even my old pal Ted Cruz, who, believe it or not, said something very beautiful on my behalf.
I hate what Jimmy Kimmel said. I am thrilled that he was fired.
Oh, wait, no, not that. The other part.
But let me tell you, if the government gets in the business of saying, what you, the media, have said, we're going to ban you from the airwaves if you don't say what we like, that will end up bad for conservatives.
I don't think I've ever said this before, but Ted Cruz is right. He's absolutely right.
That's part of his very delicate, subtle monologue last night. And then he went to break. And then he came back and just went to a typical Jimmy Kimmel monologue. But I saw this story in the Daily Mail last night. I was getting ready for Brett's show. And the story about Kimmel's writers revolting. And I thought, revolting about what? He's going to bat for him. How could they be mad at him? They said that they got word that he was going to apologize and they were going to walk out. So wait, he came back to really say, you know, he makes $17 million a year. I'm sure he wanted to come back, but you don't panic. But he came back. He said, I don't want my staff without a job, and they have no notice. And they're mad at him to make sure he doesn't apologize. So, I mean, That's who you deal with. I mean, I'm not saying that he doesn't agree with them. I'm not saying that he's not as left wing as them. But you have to realize that people on your side are not just taking orders. They're not. They're going to sit and stand up and walk out on him. So, which is just crazy. That's lack of leadership. You take control. Hey, guys, you don't like what I'm doing now and interfacing with the network? I'm like, hit the road. You know, you're not going to judge me as I try to save you. And if you feel as though you can get another job, go get another job. So, crazy. But, I mean, it is a big story. But people want to equate it with what's happened with Charlie Kirk, and you just can't equate the two. Quick note. One of my talking points today is why Republicans are not panicking. You know, the economy's not going as good as they thought. Grocery prices aren't coming down as fast as they want. Inflation's there but hasn't come down, and the housing market's still frozen. A lot of it has to do with interest rates that aren't budging because of certain things that the Jay Powell is doing. And they say it's, and smarter people than me talk about this, but they say it's linked to the Treasury. It's not linked to what Powell is doing on rates because the Treasury indicates the health of the economy. But right now, and by the way, CNN, Harry Enten came out and said this. They did a poll on economy. Who rates better, Republicans or Democrats? Republicans by 7. On crime, you guessed it, Republicans by 22. On immigration, Republicans by 13. So if you're going into midterm elections and say that every election outside when we were hit on 9/11 and George Bush had so much popularity, he was able to hold both chambers out, and then he paid the price next. But outside that, you're usually seeing Democrats, the party out of power, surge, which remember Barack Obama lost 63 seats. And now you see on the major issues, Trump still got him. Once gets approval rating up, but if that economy can start clicking in and those and the grocery prices go down, look out. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. A lot more to go. Don't move. Keep it here.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade. Don't waste a minute. I mean, this is going to be an exciting hour coming your way. We got the latest from the UN as President Zelensky has already spoken and left, but called out Russia and called on the world to rebuke Russia. The President of the United States changed his stance rapidly. We're also seeing this horrific story in Dallas where a gunman opened up and shot and wounded three people outside a ICE facility. He was evidently on a building across the street. He killed himself as they zeroed in on him. The only description I saw from the Fox affiliate was as a white guy. But is there any surprise, sadly, that ICE is being targeted? By the way, these Governor Pritzker and Governor Newsom and the Attorney General in Philadelphia, all these people, the DA in Philadelphia, keep talking about ICE as if they're not law enforcement doing their job for the country. Karl Rove is going to be with us shortly. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man, nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make.
Jimmy Kimmel back to work, and that's a good thing. We have his comeback highlights and some questionable things he said in his monologue, which is really back to usual, just go after Trump, even though you got this woman called Kamala Harris in the news, and there seems to be a lot of comedy there.
Number two.
You like to run again?
That's not in my immediate not focus. Right. I'm doing my book tour. And please, everybody, come right out. I'm going to a lot of cities.
Dems in trouble as Kamala's book forces them to relive their recent past and Joe Biden's tenure, which historically, you know, in the midterms, power usually flips to the party out of power. But so far, it's trending away from Dems. We have the latest on the book tour causing hell for the left.
Number one.
The other side can fight, too, and they've proven that. Maybe it's it could be that Russia's a paper tiger. I really didn't feel that way. Let them get their land back.
Do you think that NATO countries should shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter their airspace?
Yes, I do.
I love President Trump changing his tactics and going for it. and going all in for Ukraine. Details to come as Zelensky addresses the UN and the president blasts the organization for wasting its charter and its role that it could have to solving conflicts and problems. Karl Rove joins us now, Wall Street Journal columnist, Fox News contributor, former Bush deputy chief of staff. Karl, I love the president's change in stance when it comes to Ukraine after a detailed military briefing from Ukraine and his chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Are you as welcoming to these statements and the posting on Truth Social as I am?
I am, definitely. I think you left out one important component. We had 6 weeks in a row in which Vladimir Putin did nothing except show his disrespect and contempt for the president of the United States. I was amazed. I was appalled. In Alaska, you know, the agreement was the president would land. 5 minutes later, Putin would land. The two of them would be on the red carpet. They'd have this meeting, blah, blah, blah. Vladimir Putin deliberately kept Donald Trump waiting for 30 minutes before his plane landed. And when they had their conversation, it was obviously not constructive. And then when they went to the press conference, by tradition, whoever, wherever you are holding that meeting, the host country speaks first. You have the president of the United States and the president of Russia. If they were meeting in Switzerland, the first person to speak would be the Swiss, you know, representative, the Swiss president. So they're in Alaska. So by tradition, the president of the United States should speak first. No, Putin immediately goes to the microphone and holds forth in Russian for 30 minutes. He speaks good English. The reason he held forth in Russian was this was all about broadcasting back to Moscow. Look how powerful I am. The president of the United States is here, and I'm speaking to you, telling you why we Russia must recover our historic, you know, homeland of Ukraine, which is complete baloney. And since then, he's acted with nothing but disrespect to the president of the United States, sending aircraft over Estonia, you know, unleashing missiles on Poland. And I mean, talk about a guy who just sort of is dripping with disdain towards the president of the United States. It's been Vladimir Putin for the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, I agree with everything except for the tradition. You know, Trump is, you know, knowing Trump, he probably said, you go first, because he has no idea about that etiquette. He's not interested in it. But the 30 minutes, I didn't know. You're telling me that for the first time. So I didn't know about keeping him waiting. But I think Trump's objective is similar. I'm not going to make this personal. I just want this to end.
Yeah.
So, having said that, you know, I think the president tried to give him every option, every option. I know you're a thug, whatever it is. I could deal with you despite your dicey past. And now he made it. In one way, call, he did him a favor. I said this last night in a special report. He made it so abundantly clear that he has no interest in peace. You don't even have a gray area to discuss.
Yeah.
So it's just, what do you want to do about it?
Yeah. For six weeks, the president has been trying to give him an off-ramp. For longer than that, he's been saying, you know, I don't want this conflict. I don't want people dying. You know, let's come to an agreement. But Putin has been clear. I don't care what you say, Mr. Trump. I don't care what the president of the United States says. I'm going to unsettle all of Europe and try and reestablish the Russian, you know, the Soviet Empire with me as the new legate. And Estonia is ours. You know, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland has to be. You must now become Finlandized, like what the Russians did to Finland during the Soviet era. He wants to do to the entire European continent and make them, in essence, surrogates, allies, you know, converts, subordinates to him.
Here's what David Ignatius said of the Washington Post. As you know, Washington Post columnist, he doesn't get up every day and think that Trump walks on water, needless to say. Cut 16.
It is a big shift. Russia has been moving toward a confrontation with Europe, whose consequences could be unpredictable. They've been violating the airspace of Estonia, Poland, even Germany. And the moment was coming when those countries would shoot back. And we had Donald Trump yesterday saying that he thought it would be appropriate to shoot back if Russia continued to cross those borders and that the United States might support it. In effect, the president was drawing a red line, something he rarely does, and you have to take that seriously.
And Germany came out a little while ago and said, I would really think twice about shooting back. But Trump made it clear. I mean, there's no gray area there. And Poland said, Roger that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we may have some other incidents. We need to get to the bottom of it. But two airports in Denmark and Norway were shut down yesterday by the appearance of large drones, very effectively deployed and operated, caused them to close that airspace and shut down the airports. You know, maybe that was some drone enthusiast trying to look big, but I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't some Russian actor behind it.
Absolutely. So yesterday when the president got up and spoke, he called out the UN. Cut three.
I didn't think of it at the time because I was too busy working to save millions of lives. That is the saving and stopping of these wars. But later I realized that the United Nations wasn't there for us. They weren't there. I thought of it really after the fact, not during these negotiations, which were not easy. That being the case, what is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential, but it's not even coming close to living up to that potential.
Right. And he went on to say, what are you doing with this climate change? He says it's a big, it's a hoax. And he went on to say that you get control of your borders, you're losing your country. I help you with that. I fix that. How do you feel about this bluntness?
Well, there comes a moment when you need to be blunt, and we have seen in the past that bluntness works. Ronald Reagan sent to the United Nations Jean Kirkpatrick as his ambassador, and things got somewhat better for a while. And President Trump has got to do this himself. He's got a new ambassador there in the form of Michael Walls,
who's great. An
effective operator, terrific choice. And but yeah, I mean, sometimes these international organizations need to be spoken to with clarity and directness. And one thing you'll say about President Trump, he tends to be pretty direct at times.
Absolutely. So we also had a meeting with Arab leaders. I asked Michael Waltz, the ambassador, what came out of it. He said, I can't talk because there's no statement's been read, so I can't get ahead of the statement. But evidently they made progress about what happens the next day when this is over, and they're all going to be focused on getting the hostages out. That only happens, Carl, and you'll know better than me, if you see people eye to eye. You can't keep on talking, writing letters, talking to your ambassador and emissary. That's what's great about the UN, the person-to-person relationship. Guys, we got to come an end to this. Come visit me. I'm over in this office. We're going to work that. Call over the Qatari leader. I get over, get Saudi Arabia. Let's just do this right now. There's a huge advantage to that. That's why I'll never be one to say get rid of it.
Yeah. No, and look, this also points up one other thing. The Congress has become so poisoned and the relationships have diminished so much that we spent a number of months, I think 4 months or 5 months. Well, actually, no, it's 7 months without an ambassador to the United Nations, 8 months without an ambassador to the United Nations. And we finally have to get Walls, who's respected. If you talk to Republicans and Democrats, there's enormous respect for him. And yet we have to get him in there by basically saying, OK, we're going to take a block of non-cabinet officials and approve them since you Democrats are not allowing this process to move forward. They will regret having established this precedent of blocking these appointees next time they're in the White House, unless the Republicans realize that it's better to act as the adult and not get retribution for, you know, return to them what they did to us.
Kamala Harris has got a book tour going on, at which time she's having trouble explaining her book. And I just wonder the objective to it. I saw David Axelrod, a guy I know you really respect, who said, I don't understand politically why she wrote this and called everybody out like this. Here's a little of what she said yesterday. Cut 26.
There are many factors, I think, that played into the outcome of that election. But I think probably one of the biggest in my mind is we just didn't have enough time.
We didn't have enough time.
You agree?
No. In fact, I think the shortness of the campaign worked to her advantage. I don't think she wears well. We saw that as vice president. You know, she didn't get better. You know what's I have not read the book, but I've read a lot of the excerpts. I don't intend to buy the book. But I am shocked by the smallness of it. She is so petty. It's like, let me get back at, you know, Gavin Newsom. You didn't take my phone call. You said you were out hiking, you know. And I mean, it's like every excerpt I've read, there is some kind of dig at somebody. You know, Shapiro, well, he didn't, you know, he was too ambitious. And, you know, I mean, it's like she never does anything wrong. And she doesn't understand that people didn't want to vote for her for a couple of reasons. One is she had been part – it was the Biden-Harris administration that had subjected the country to an enormous inflationary boom and was weak and feckless and failed to do anything about the border. And they didn't want four more years of that. And second of all, they looked at her and said, I can't see you sitting in the Oval Office. If you cannot tell me one thing that you disagreed with Joe Biden on, why do I want you? I want change. And you don't represent any constructive change. And this is so personal and so petty and so small that the idea that she has any political future on the national stage is ridiculous. Of course she won't.
Well, I mean, you might think she's not going to win, but my sense is she was lining up the debate stage. Whitmer, also figure that in. Gavin Newsom didn't call me back. Shapiro will be there. Didn't call out Bashir. I'm not sure why. But this is her debate stage. Now, she's not equipped. She doesn't study. She doesn't have any ideas. She wants to be queen of America, you know, where it's a ceremonial thing. And that's why when she said, I thought it was apparent how I'd be different than Joe Biden. Why would it be apparent? We have no idea what you stand for.
Wait a minute. If it was apparent, then you wouldn't say not anything that I can think of at the moment. I mean, if it was apparent how different you were, then that assumes that people, A, would accept it, and B, you know what it is. And the logical conclusion is say it. And the fact that she didn't say it caused a great many Americans to conclude it ain't going to be anything different. Whatever doubts they had about Donald Trump, they said life was better when he was president, and I don't want four more years of this, and she is four more years of this.
True. Who do you look at right now as the Democratic frontrunner? Just give me the top three.
Well, for fool's errand, but I'll do it for you. It's a fool's errand because, look, there are several geological ages that are going to come and go before the 2028 contest frames up. You know, the Paleozoic, the Mesozoic, the Jurassic. I mean, there is a long time. But do the Democrats have a bench? Yes. I don't find Gavin Newsom credible, but he's making himself, you know, effective inside that structure. Whitmer, it'll be interesting to see what stage she gets onto after she's no longer governor. Shapiro is a player. Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland, is a potential player. I can't see Pritzker, but he's going to have money, resources, and something of a base. There's some discussion about Governor Bashir of Kentucky. He could be the, you know, Bill Clinton of 2028. That is to say, somebody who comes from the South, the rim of the South, and is able to talk to moderate and conservative independents. And there are going to be others. You know, there's going to be somebody on the left. I don't know if it's going to be AOC. It's not going to be Bernie, but there may be somebody on the hard left of the Democratic Party. Who knows? Maybe it'll be the mayor of New York, who looks like it's going to be Mr. Mamdani. And you know, here's the deal. We don't know. You know, if you go back to this stage in 1989. I don't think a lot of Democrats would say, you know what, it's going to be that bright young governor of Arkansas be our presidential nominee. I just don't think. I mean, particularly now when we're so polarized as a country, then both parties are essentially broken, and each one of them, each the Republicans and Democrats, each face big decisions in the future. It's going to be hard to predict now who's going to emerge. You know, some of my acquaintances who are big Clintonistas are talking about Mitch Landrieu. Now, he's an admirable guy, very smart, very able, was a great mayor of New Orleans and former lieutenant governor in the aftermath of Katrina of Louisiana. But that goes to show, I mean, how widespread and how open this thing is.
And Rahm Emanuel, too. Carl Rove, well, we could go on forever, and I still won't get all the information I need out of you. But unfortunately, we have a break. Have a great day, Carl.
You too, buddy.
Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
It's
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They've defended my right to poke fun at our leaders and to advocate for subjects that I think are important by allowing me to use their platform, and I am very grateful for that. With that said, I was not happy when they pulled me off the air on Wednesday. I did not agree with that decision, and I told them that.
So that was an emotional Jimmy Kimmel yesterday. He's back on the air, but he's missing two-thirds of his, or at least half of his affiliates, and that was his sense. But when he said making fun of leaders, that's the problem. Make fun of leaders, but you're only making fun of one guy. And a lot of the predicate is not accurate, even though he says he's got fact-checkers on the jokes. And a lot of people say, who cares? They're just jokes. But when you have network shows, all three of them, hammering against one man, one party, that's what gets people enraged. So he said, I go on leaders. I mean, tell you the truth, one place he could go right away is Kamala Harris. I mean, this book tour, taking aim at other Democrats, it's a safe thing to do. I mean, Republicans aren't even part of it. So go out there and talk about Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, whatever. Then you begin to get more people going, you know, I watch that show. He is funny, but maybe, you know, he insults everybody rather than I feel like I'm watching a political show. There are people that like Sean Hannity and there are people like Rachel Maddow. Why, if you're a host, don't you want both?
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
If anything, would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind.
This was not a trick question. As I said, this was not a trick question. It wasn't a pop quiz. It wasn't one of those. This was a, you know, there was an affordability piece, and there was a change versus continuity piece. And she gave up the mantle of change that she had occupied in moving from eight down to three up. And the moment she started running on democracy and basically Joe Biden's message, she went, lost that advantage. And I don't understand how you don't understand. That's the part I don't get.
And she doesn't understand in the book. And Rahm Emanuel started that interview with, I really want to talk about the past. Like, sorry, she just published a book. I can't really do anything about it. Rahm Emanuel's interesting because he's painting himself as a moderate, taking on Trump, but not vociferously and trying to be a comedian like Gavin Newsom while running his state into the ground. Rahm Emanuel is probably the best mayor in Chicago over the last out of the last three. This one guy is terrible, and then the other one was awful. And this one and Rahm Emanuel didn't have much success, and he had that controversy with the police, and he had to fire his police chief, and even though the police chief had nothing to do with it, and Rahm Emanuel left and basically waited for a Democrat to win. Joe Biden won, and he became an ambassador to Japan. He got some international experience, came back and said, wait, this is a wide open field. I think I'll run. Here's a little bit more from Rahm Emanuel on everything that's going on right now, including the last standard bearer for the party, and that was Kamala Harris, cut 30.
But to say you didn't appreciate that people were looking for a change. The irony is, if you look and do an autopsy of the election, she, you know, Biden Harris is 8 points down. She gets the baton. She runs all the way up to 3 points up. That's 11-point swing from that interview and the debate forward. She goes back from change to continuity, and she loses the election by a point and a half. It was actually the continuity of Biden, which is the trip point. And to say that you don't get it, you don't appreciate it, means you didn't understand where the election was, or one of the major fault lines of the election was.
Yeah.
People wanted a change, and you could have been that.
Right. But she said that Joe Biden was a very successful president. I just want to continue this. And she has no plan. So she'll get blown out on the debate stage. And now, not only do you have the auto pen investigation, where all the staffers from Joe Biden have to qualify why they didn't say anything, and the ones that don't take the fifth say a lot when they did that. Now she's out there talking about things like, I don't, you know, Tim Walz just destroyed himself. Destroyed us during the debate on October 1st multiple times. Remember, Tim Walz is the worst debater, but He was the one who said, I'm a terrible debater. Here's listen to him. Number one, he made up his military background. He made up his coaching background. He has no legitimate accomplishments in Minnesota, except for being the most left-wing in the country. Cut 38. Remember this. Remember he said he was in China during Tiananmen Square massacre. It never happened. Cut 38.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Right. Don't shoot protesters. Is that what you learned? Did you have to jot that down? Why you spent your honeymoon in China is a little bit disturbing, I think. Pretty interesting. So Governor Waltz is going to run for president, too, over there. You just sure. Right after next November, not this November, after next November, and you're really going to see it in the summer of next summer, you're going to see every Democrat who feels as though they can win and beat J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Governor DeSantis, whoever emerges over there. So Gavin Newsom thinks he's a hero, thinks he's a tough guy. Everybody knows he's pretending. But here he is on with Stephen Colbert, who's just worshiping at his altar. Cut 41.
We have 41 lawsuits against this son of a b-. We're pushing back and we're winning. And we're filling a void on a lot of issues. I'm out here for Climate Week. California is the tent pole in terms of climate policy in this country. As he walks away from Paris, he walks away
So by the way, That's going the way of the pronouns. That whole climate policy, make people suffer for the good of Earth on faulty science. When questioned, you get screamed at and be called ignorant and you get canceled. Do you understand that's done? But you continue to talk about it. Keep going.
Tent pole in terms of climate policy in this country. As he walks away from Paris, he walks away from leadership, moral authority around the rest of the world. California is trying to assert itself on health policy. Same thing. We created this West Coast Collaborative. We're not going to listen to this guy. We're not going to listen to him trying to pronounce acetaminophen, or we're not going to sit there listen to all that. No one trusts the guy.
You're wrong. Go ahead. And you want to run against Donald Trump? Good luck. You want to act really tough against Donald Trump? That's fine. You just have to solve your budget deficit. You have to figure out why gas is $2 or $3 or maybe $4 more expensive in your state. And you got to hope that people don't figure out that you shut down of refineries, your high taxes, business attitude towards business is forcing everybody out. That's the story. And you want to go to bat for climate change and illegal immigrants. Okay, that might help you in a primary too in California or Massachusetts, but it's not going to help you win anywhere. And I'm just so glad. I'm glad that people have moved past it. I mean, Pete Buttigieg, for example, grows a beard, gets rid of his pronouns, stops talking about how great it is to be gay. He just says, I think I'm the best leader. And even though I don't think he's the best leader, that's what we should get back to. Instead, you have a vice president talking about how it was too much to ask America to vote for a woman of color, and then with a gay man on the ticket. Instead of just saying, I'm the vice president, I had to pick somebody, you pick somebody that backfills what you don't have. So what did Pete Buttigieg have that the vice president didn't have? I don't know. I don't see any skill set, except for he's very comfortable. He's very comfortable in his own skin. He can have a conversation. He can make a speech. But in terms of a skill set, I don't see it. If you want to ask me somebody that earned the right to far higher office, it would be an example for me would be maybe Beshear, because I can't tell you. People in Kentucky tell me don't fall for it. He's not a moderate, but his family's Republican, and he's got a 60% approval rating or 58% approval rating. That's a guy, successful two-term governor, ran against strong candidates. He should excel. That's what happens. Take that step. Understood. Maybe get some money. I understand. Then you look at maybe, I can't even say Wes Moore because the numbers don't look great with Wes Moore, even though he's very conversant with an interesting background with the Academy graduate. I think it's Annapolis. I would say that's an example. You might look at the resume of Rahm Emanuel and say, that's the experience I need. But you can't look at Pete Buttigieg and say, what a great transportation secretary, what a great mayor. He's not. You know, a guy didn't even want to show up at that disaster in Ohio. Palestine disaster in Ohio. Remember that. And then when you look at just governors on production, Nobody has been a more effective governor, much to the chagrin of every Democrat, because he's helped keep Florida as red as can be. And that is Governor DeSantis. If you want to see governor's success, Governor Youngkin, he didn't get some legislation through that he wanted to, including bringing the Capitals and Wizards over to Virginia. And he got stopped a few times. He wanted to flip both chambers of his state house and Senate, and he wasn't able to do that. All right. But he was an effective leader, a constant worker. You go, wow, I wonder if this guy can be in higher office. Governor of Texas. I mean, the guy accomplished stuff. You might not vote for him, but you accomplished stuff. Gavin Newsom doesn't done anything effective. Governor Pritzker has been awful as a governor. Right now, they're making their names off pushing back on law enforcement in the form of ICE. I'm going to take masks off American policemen and women who are picking up illegal immigrants, the worst first. On command. This is, to me, just as bad as defund the police that every Democrat denies they said. What we witnessed this morning is three being shot outside an ICE facility when they're targeted again. Remember, they already had an attack thwarted at the border in Texas. We know what happened with the attack over the weekend in Illinois, in Chicago. That's because these leaders are fomenting violence and unrest and vilifying men and women of ICE. That's how crazy it is. And we're still, the FBI is now investigating the anti-ICE sniper that took his own life as they were, according to reports, as they descended in on stopping him, who was opening fire at ICE facility, I believe at 7 in the morning local time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. We'll come back in just a moment. We'll bring you the latest on that and the latest from the UN. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Tang Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Basically, these people from the Biden administration would call up our team and like scream at them and curse. It just got to this point where we were like, no, we're not gonna take down things that are true. That's ridiculous.
And they did give that side of the story. And that's why Zuckerberg, people think, well, he's just, he's kissing up to Trump because he wants to make sure that he gets regulation passed and people understand that he wants a government contracts and being the head of AI and trying to find a way to be there with Altman and Musk. Got it. But there's also bitterness, because even if he put the Zuckerberg bucks in and tilted the 2020 election, and no one will ever forget that. Bitterness about the way they were treated, the way his people were berated, by the way the FBI was all over him. And now he realizes he was used. He was used in August of 2020 of the election when the FBI tipped it off and say, you know, in the fall, there's going to be this disinformation about Joe Biden and his family. Just don't be surprised if some cyber thing popped up. So when Giuliani comes out and tells the New York Post, I got Hunter Biden's laptop and it shows Joe Biden's in bed selling America down the river so his family can prosper. They quickly moved in, sidelined, shadow banned, or flat out banned everyone, including the current press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany at the time, to make sure everyone knows this is classic Russian disinformation. And Zuckerberg, extremely bright, does anyone argue with that? Said, I've been used. And then when Musk buys X, he goes, this has been egregious. Pandemic, the election, conservative voices all squelched. And then this news comes out about Google. Google saying we were told to shadow ban on YouTube anybody that had direct inverse information from what the Biden administration was putting out. So Google admits they had to do this. So Jim Jordan, who's been investigating this relentlessly, talked about the revelation that Google just admitted to. Cut 47.
God bless President Trump and the people he put together in his coalition, the leader of the party that actually is out there fighting for Americans' freedom. I mean, you think about it, the idea that we had Elon Musk, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., and President Trump all in the same team is because they understood that they were going to get on President Trump's team because he was going to defend freedom. So this is a big win for the First Amendment today. And a big win for people's liberty.
So, and that because they admitted it. And other people are saying, yeah, I was shadow banned. We had Alex Berenson on. You probably saw him with Tucker through the pandemic. You're the first one to come out and say, I don't think this came from a lab. I think it came from China. And the first one to come out and say this vaccine doesn't work. It might be effective with some, but it doesn't mean you're not going to get the virus. And they shadow banned him. And he sued Twitter at the time. And now they find out this about Google. He was on today. So people are saying, you know, this Trump administration is trying to control the press and trying to control social media. What was Joe Biden doing? If you have a problem with Trump, like Ted Cruz did and Mitch McConnell did about what the FCC may or may not have done, it's still speculating, but people want to take aim at that. And they said if FCC is deciding who's going to be hosting and who's going to be reporting the news, I have a problem with that. You have to also have a problem with this. Can I see a Mark Kelly or Gavin Newsom say, yeah, this was from my side, but I'm really upset about this? You know, it helped Joe Biden win an election and sustain popularity and prevent a bloodletting at the midterm election. But I'm upset about this. Not one. But you saw Mitch McConnell. You saw Congressman Bacon. You saw Ted Cruz, of course. You saw Rand Paul come out, even though they know all the late night shows are tilted against him. So I think that's important. Here's Ted Cruz. Here's Jimmy Kimmel saluting Ted Cruz for helping him out. Cut 53.
Or I never would have imagined, like Ben Shapiro, Clay Travis, Candace Owens, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, even my old pal Ted Cruz, who, believe it or not, said something very beautiful on my behalf.
I hate what Jimmy Kimmel said. I am thrilled that he was fired.
Oh, wait, no, not that. The other part.
But let me tell you, if the government gets in the business of saying, well, we don't like what you, the media, have said, we're going to ban you from the airwaves if you don't say what we like, that will end up bad for conservatives.
I don't think I've ever said this before, but Ted Cruz is right. He's absolutely right.
Right. I would love to see people turn around and say, by the way, that Google story that just came out is abhorrent. And it goes to show you, too. Look at the powerful companies that just knuckle under because the government has a lot of control over it. And now there's government contracts that, you know, there was a time when the Bush administration was in there that after the initial 9/11 attacks, everybody was helping. The movie industry was helping to try to imagine the next terror attack. The social media companies were emerging. They were going to help and find out if the Al-Qaeda had infiltrated our social media apparatus. I got it. So they were big help. And then they just shut down. Remember when they had one of the shootings over in Inland Empire in California, they got the shooter's phone and they wanted to open up the phone to see if this was a bigger story, a bigger attack, and Apple would not cooperate. Well, those days are over. Apple, Facebook, Meta, you know, you have OpenAI and everything else. All these AI companies, they're all working with the administration because they want the government contracts and they want the support. And what they can do is this. They can compete with China if the government can get out of their way. They should be manipulating how they do it. Now, some people are upset that Trump's investing in some of these companies, but he's doing it for the country. So if the country's going to lend $400 million to build a facility, they say, can you give the country a piece of that company? And these guys are going, sure, you got to do that. The negative side to that is if X company is giving a piece back to the United States government, won't they get preferential treatment when it comes to government contracts? You know, even if you're not, that's the perception that's there. So a lot of interesting things going on. Lastly, we're looking at the midterm elections, and it's going to be 4 or 5 seats. We know it, dividing both parties in the House, because everything's been redistricted to this point where it's almost predictable. I believe there's only about 35 seats people consider legitimately up. That's why the president's been pushing, not happy with the census, and he was pushing for massive advantage, pushing for gerrymandering to take place in these Republican states that aren't overwhelmingly represented by the constituency, like Texas. And because of that, California said, okay, if you're going to do that, Gavin Newsom wants to be president, I will come out and I'm going to push the redistricting in California. But what happened to Gavin Newsom is he ran across this guy named Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger went out of his way to set up an independent council to make sure independent decision makers decided how districts would be drawn up. So you can have 7 Republican seats in a Democratic state like California. He's looking at gerrymandering out. Keep an eye on would Arnold's take it on Gavin Newsom. Now, Arnold left with about 42% approval rating, but as an individual, he's light years more popular than Gavin Newsom is because he's known more for being a hero from Pumping Iron to Terminator. And I think the power of Schwarzenegger, able to get involved in something that doesn't involve Trump and the Republican Party, because he's definitely different on environment too, I think it's going to be an interesting showdown in November. And if Gavin Newsom loses this, it's really going to be hard for him to reclaim that momentum. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, I want to see you Saturday in Richmond, Virginia. History, Liberty, and Last with Fox Nation. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.